We continue now with the perfect midwife for the time we live in, a time of whole system transition she calls jump time. A best-selling author, internationally renowned scholar, philosopher, and teacher, Jean Houston is the co-director of the Foundation for Mind Research in Ashland, Oregon. A consultant to UNICEF and other international agencies, she's a self-described heretic psychologist and one of the all-time favorite guests of this program. The new book is Jump Time, Shaping Your Future in a World of Radical Change. For anyone just joining us, how about a thumbnail version of Jump Time?
Jump Time is the changing of the guard at every possible level. Jump Time is the biggest deconstruction of everything that we knew or thought about and or existed in, and its reconstruction. Jump Time is where we are living, the biggest change in human history, and as I said, other times in history thought they were it, they are wrong, this is it. And what my book is about is how do we jump with and stay sane and creative in Jump Time.
We mentioned punk eek in the first segment, not punk eek itself, but punctuated equilibrium, which is the short version. Punk eek sounds like some kind of band, but it's not.
It's scientists getting silly.
Yeah, and they ought to do that more often. But maybe a brief definition of that and why this is the time for that.
Well, punctuated equilibrium refers to the fact that in the evolutionary record, you can observe that a species will go on in a certain way for hundreds, thousands, even millions of years, and not too much happens, and then suddenly, relatively quickly, it will be a whole system transition, and it will be a rather different evolved species.
It then merges with something.
So it's equilibrium, it's evolutionary equilibrium, punctuates, and it jumps to something else. It doesn't merge, no, it punctuates. And I'm saying, of course, that I think that systemically, in our bodies, minds, psyches, spirits, governments, religions, social forms, relationships, we are in a jump time. We are in a state in which the equilibrium of hundreds and even thousands of years has been punctuated, and this is jump time.
Yeah. We talk about science, and biology is used in the book quite often, which is perfect for an organismic paradigm which is emerging. And you use bacteria as a partnership ethos metaphor. Can you explain how bacteria survives with partnership, with a more feminine approach, and not the domination model?
Well, how did you? I'm curious about how you saw it working.
Okay, let me just
because I'd like to make another kind of metaphor.
Yeah, let me see what I have here. I have it in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
Bacteria as a metaphor. The way it gets by. The way it. Here we go. Page 28.
Mm-hmm.
My notes are pretty extensive when I get a book like yours because I don't want to screw it up. Contrary to the view that evolution is a combative,
yes,
red in tooth and claw struggle, bacteria
mm-hmm.
led the way by networking.
That's right.
Microbial life forms multiplied
yeah.
and grew more complex by co-opting others, not just by killing them. They could also merge, combine their bodies, form permanent alliances. Symbiogenesis, the merging of organisms into new collectives, evolved as a major strategy for environmental survival.
Yes. Well, that's I'm glad you did that because I thought it would be much better read than trying to explain it. And that's the way things do survive. The network, we do understand that the network is the wave of the past and it is it's the tide of the future. And today, people are networking, especially through the internet, for example, in so many ways that they never could before. We are in a planet of colossal busybodiness. I mean, when I think of what my life is like late at night, I'm so glad that I am not 20 years younger, because you would see in front of you somebody who would probably weigh 400 pounds, have bottled glasses, and be popping Twinkies in their mouth, because I have this whole sense of the world mind taking a walk with itself. Network. I work now in maybe 10 different cultures, you know, networking, pulling the teachers together, pulling the new alternative health professionals together with the teachers, putting them together with new innovative scientists and theologians. And it is like one is there as an orchestra conductor. One becomes a kind of Leonard Bernstein of a new kind of sense of collective commons, a collective responsibility, in which everybody has a piece of the total of the action and understands how they are part, who they are, and also part of the whole.
And we talked about the fusion of the different cultures around the world. We're not talking about the return of Weather Report and Stanley Clark and Company. We're talking about a cultural fusion. And there's a great story, and I wrote down, which is so poetic, and there's such poetry that's in the book. I could underline passages, you know, little phrases throughout the book and come up with a wonderful epic poem. Which might not be a bad way to spend my time. But the synchronicity of Aboriginal Chirungas in the Dreamtime is one of the most delightful stories in the book that illustrates the breakdown of the membrane.
Yes,
why don't you tell us?
Breakdown of the membrane, that things are passing through in our dreams, in our psyches. We have leaky margins with each other. Well, I've done a lot of work in Australia, and the Chirunga is a kind of symbolic mandala that is used by the Aboriginal peoples. Very powerful. Very beautiful. And sometimes it represents their walkabout, the walkabout to their sacred places.
And you went to what was called Ayers Rock.
Call Uluru.
Uluru, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I found was that psychiatrists, and I've trained a lot of psychiatrists and social workers and psychologists, they report that their white, Caucasian, often English and Irish descended patients are dreaming these Chirungas, and these Chirungas are popping through. So I know an Aboriginal woman who says, why do they think that, you know, they've killed his wolf, and they haven't done that, because, you know, he's white fella, the white fella, he go by our sacred site, and one of our spirit babies jumps into the womb if the lady's pregnant, and before you know it, she's borning herself a black fella spirit, an Aboriginal, so they, the Aboriginal's coming back. But in a sense, when we look at the world fusion, black fellow, yellow fellow, red fellow, white fellow, all fellow, you know, they are in this extraordinary state of blending. We are moving into a global sensibility, whether we like it or not. But I think with high individuation of culture, it isn't going to be just a blur.
Yeah. We talked about entelechy and the force that helps propel an organism toward actualization. And love is a key driver in this process, relationship in general, but especially love, as I can attest to only recently, or abandonment of same. We decide maybe it's not worth it and give up and get stuck on the couch watching the ball game, drinking beers, or watching soap operas and eating bonbons and just giving up for this lifetime. Now, you quote Michael Ventura in the book, and that was quite resonant with my experience. In fact, why don't I just go to page 113 and read that, refresh your memory, and put it about as well as it can be put. And this is a quote from his book, actually from the LA Village Voice of February 1994. In love, we reveal ourselves in each other's presence. After the first flush of romance, it will strip us down. Then love will call up everything within us that is not love, that it may be healed. Yes. So to stand in the state of love and to remain there is to be inundated and shaken by everything inside that is not love, everything drawn to the healing power of love, a power that does not let us go, does not let us off. It's dizzying. It's frightening. It has no rules. Its deep sweetness and its great reserves of calm exist only in relation to its capacity for revelation. Wow. I mean, that just says it all right there. That might be your warning not to get it, not to get it, fall in love, right? Because then you're going to have to deal with all your stuff, right?
Well, I think that's one of the best statements I've ever seen of the fact that love is not hearts and flowers. It's revelation. It's the necessity for transforming. If you and I are in love, then we hone each other. You know, we get down to the gristle and the bone of it all. And that's why 1 + 1 always equals, in love, 7,483. And that's when the entelechy is often called forth, you know, that one gets into the essence of who and what one is, because if one does not discover the essence of the other and the essence of oneself and meet in essence and all the existential stuff, then invariably there's trouble in paradise.
Yeah, there certainly is. And I thought it was just Stephanie. You know, I fell in love with her over a year, and I thought, man, she's ruthless. I mean, I just every, you know, last ember of a dying habit resurfacing, and she has no tolerance for it. And I thought that was simply, she's a tough nut to
crack. You get a catharsis of all your old stuff if you've got a mature beloved. Now, kids, you know, who are being urged on by biological necessity, time to procreate, be fruitful and multiply and multiply and multiply, they're not going to feel this.
Or as McClure said, high on the drugs of our glands.
That's right, yeah. But once the glands are not that important anymore, then, of course, you get down to the real stuff. That's why I think, you know, with our lives, you know, you have a 9-year-old daughter. Well, in 2040, you know, she'll be about 49 years old, which means that she will probably be part of this whole revolution in the genome and genetics and could probably live for another 100 years. Now, I don't know about your daughter as a 140, 150-year-old lady well into the 21st century, but one of the things we have to realize is that with these long lives, what are our professions going to be? We can't quit at 65. It'll have to be lifelong learning. And what about staring at the same face over the breakfast table for 100 years? You know, will we have to recovenant our marriages and have deep sacramental whoop-de-doops and deep restatings of our commitments and where we want to go together? I mean, all social processes that have been sustained, low these last 5 or 60,000 years, are going to undergo phenomenal stress, strain, and transformation in this new century.
Bring on the Tantra, baby.
Well, exactly. And we'll be looking at the genius of other cultures who may have, you know, tapped into a kind of back-to-the-future brilliance about many of these social forms. Of course, Tantra is certainly one of them.
Yeah, and you mentioned that in the book, and it's funny because we went to a Healing Love workshop a few weeks ago, and I've been doing the healing sounds at night, and it's been improving my bruxism and has had a number of other wonderful effects on what I'm going through. There's another quote. You quote another person in the book, and I'm going to see if I can find her. I don't know if it's yes, it's, here we go, 128. We're talking about Evelyn Underhill. I'm sorry, Evelyn Underwood.
Yes, Underhill.
Is it Underhill?
Yes, Evelyn Underhill, the great philosopher and scholar of mysticism.
Okay, and the quote is, we're talking about, in this case, resonance. When we come into phase with the creative energies of the universe, our scope enlarges such that everything we see, the little girl in the swing, the dog gnawing a bone, the old man in the nursing home, so on and so forth, that becomes a celebration of the wild, exuberant, all-accomplishing energy of divine manifestation. In our first segment, you talked about your own experience in that case. Evelyn Underhill says the marks of this resonance are, one, a complete absorption in the interests of the infinite, under whatever mode it is apprehended by the self. Two, a consciousness of sharing its strength, acting by its authority, which results in a complete sense of freedom, an invulnerable serenity, and usually urges the self to some form of heroic effort or creative activity. And three, the establishment of the self as a power for life, a center of energy, and an actual parent of spiritual vitality in other men, other people. A complete sense of freedom is what caught my attention here, because, you know, we talk about living in the land of the free, and yet we are such slaves to the urges that are fueled by television ads and by consumption. You know, it's a culture consuming itself, is what we're seeing. And yet, in freedom, it's through the highest connection with spirit that we find freedom.
Spirituality gives us access to a much larger bandwidth of being. You know, we are living in the kingdom then. We're not living on the outskirts or in the suburbs, you know. We are, as Yeshua ben Yosef, you know, Jesus of Nazareth said, you know, that the kingdom is both within you and, it's another translation, is in the midst of you. But it really needs the deep work of consciousness or the simplicity of acceptance. You know, sometimes people don't have children, often have these experiences of illumination, of seeing the interaction, like I described in my own experience where I saw myself and the fig tree in the yard and the dogs in the closet and the plane in the sky and my idea of the Virgin Mary and my little Mary Jane shoes. I mean, they were all part of the same interdependent reality. And, we are gloriously over-endowed in our brain-mind-body equipment. We almost don't need this much equipment for the kind of small lives that we live, but now we do.
Yeah, junk DNA, not junk necessarily.
That's right, not at all. Yeah. And we do. We are resonance phenomenon. We are, you know, you are going out right now at 186,000 miles an hour because light is ultimately reaching you and is sending out a version of you, and who is to say that version may not be hologrammatically linked out there into the mind of God and be continued, and some part of you continues to grow. One of my exercises, I never thought to discuss this on the air, is to assume that this is true, or to think of it as a working metaphor. and to assume that those parts of oneself that are contained, if you will, in the great hologram, the universal hologram, or the mind of all being, depending on your metaphors, that they're not ephemera, they don't die, but they continue in you. For example, were you a poet as a child?
You know, in kindergarten, I did get a poem published.
All right. So that kindergarten child poetically developed and then picked up again where? In your 20s sometime?
Actually, only about 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay, so in your early 30s. That picked up, but you may have been surprised at how easily it picked up and how developed it already was.
Yes.
All right. So what I'm saying is that these self-creating, ongoing, learning, creative parts of ourselves.
Some people call
continuous.
It selves, actual selves.
They are selves. I'm convinced of it. I mean, we are polyphrenic. We have an orchestral crew of selves, healer, meditator, lover, mechanic, poet, musician, dancer. They do continue. In other words, and so you didn't have to keep at it from the age of 5 to the age of 35. In other words, it continues. Now, whether it continues in the deep self, or whether it's the deep self that is shaded into the mind of all beings so that God knows where you are gathering ideas, instincts, rhythms, oscillations, metaphors, maybe from all over the universe. And then when you finally tap into them, because they have been preserved and kept on going, they are organic. Everything is evolving. Everything is growing, going, perhaps even the Godhead. So that when you finally tap into it, there it is, fully. Maybe the infinity game is what, maybe the selfing game is what infinity does for fun. And the development of the multiple selves within a particular body-mind system called Paul Nelson or called Gene Houston.
Oh, wow. I mean, this is used for the next 3 years for me, I'll have you know. Let's talk for the next 4.5 minutes or so about the internet, because we are running out of time with our time together. And I know you have a very busy schedule, and I appreciate you coming down to our studios. The internet, and I heard this statistic on TV on the radio. For the first time, the first generation in the history of television, the first generation of kids that viewing TV viewing levels are actually going down, and that's because of the internet.
Because the internet engages you.
And the internet is helping develop this sort of inner life, this introspection.
Yes, it is. Yeah, high tech, high touch.
Talk about that.
Well, high technology almost always requires, as its both its antidote and its extension, a high touch, a high hands-on, a high internalization. Thus, when these high technologies came into hospitals, what also developed simultaneously? Holistic medicine, preventive medicine. You know, I mean, I could give you so many different examples of this, but the internet is one of the best, because it in the linking of you with imaginal space out there, touching upon times and spaces, taking on archetypal names, Thunder on the Mountain Schwartz, Flaming Arrow Shapiro, doing things, orchestrating events and projects that you would have been a perfect milquetoast about doing or even attempting in your normal life. This is then, it reflects back, it refracts back into inner space, and you find that your own inner images and your inner worlds, your inner screens have opened up as your outer screens have been extended. So I think it's changing the way we think, the way we do things. And one of the things I say in the book, it's actually one of my favorite metaphors, is that as the great civilizations grew up along the great waters, the great rivers in the 4th millennium BC, along the Nile, the Egyptian civilization, the Tigris and Euphrates, the Yangtze, Ganges, so an extraordinary new civilization is growing up along the great river of electronic information that is the internet. And of course it's culturally fusioned, because it is linking the rivulets and streams that are the great branchings, the different websites, the branchings off this great river of electronic information.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the internet, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got two websites.
And how have you changed?
It's been extraordinary my whole life. I've separated from my wife of 11 years. I feel like I'm really beginning to tap into my potential, just beginning to tap into it. And I'm also come head to head with my issues. I mean, immediately. I mean, you know, womanizing or excessive libido? I mean, the internet, if you want it, there it is. That's the number one research site on the internet.
The amplification of private deviance.
Absolutely. And you know, the second most searched item on the web after pornography, do you know what it is?
What is it?
Poetry.
Poetry, yes.
Yeah. So that's,
I didn't know that. No, that's interesting. That's helpful.
And that's what's developed in me. I mean, you know, you talk about people being able to reinvent themselves so quickly. And, you know, I've gone from a person who, you know, didn't care about poetry to one who wanted to bring it into my daughter's life, to a person who interviewed Allen Ginsberg, all of a sudden having lunch with you and talking about projective verse. I mean, it's an incredible, and I mean, 6 years, that's quite sophisticated. Of course, I know what I go with my intuition on what's important and what
But this what accelerated resonated. It. Your intuition and your entelechy, your deep divine purpose, went hand in glove and accelerated, so that you probably did in several years what normally would have probably taken you 10 or 15.
Even longer.
And or longer. Yeah. I'm just being nice about it.
Yeah, well, thanks very much. No, it was very intense. And that's why I have compassion for people like Bill Clinton, you know, because there's a tremendous life force in that. And he used it the wrong way, and he got caught literally with his pants down.
I mean, I know these people. And frankly, if anybody would have, because... to be in the White House, and I spent a lot of time with them in the White House, as you know, to see the level, not just of daily, but of hourly projection, toxic negatives projected onto them constantly. Very little empowerment, believe it or not. I mean, I would see Hillary come and say, oh, look at this wonderful letter somebody wrote me, you know, and she was so pleased, you know, and he would do the same thing. You can't have that much negativity without, you know, whatever is your weakness or your shadow arising. And, I mean, if they had given him a lot... There is a tribe, I write about it, in South Africa, where if somebody has really trashed himself and others, if he's really bummed out, they sit him down, and for 3 days and three nights, everybody sits around him, and they appreciate him.
They praise that
they
person.
They praise him.
In
they
this country, we'd
him.
Be stoning him.
Yeah, they praise him, and at 3 days a night, he's a wonderful new citizen and very creative.
And the same story about the Iroquois Confederacy also tells that story as well, which is a beautiful story. And, you know, that's part of my heritage, Mohawk, on my father's
Are
side.
Are you Mohawk?
Many,
yeah.
many years, just a slight part of it,
yeah.
you know. But
you come from an old family, old American family.
On my father's side,
yeah.
part of it, yeah.
It's almost impossible.
Upstate New York?
Upstate New York, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost impossible if you come from an old American family not to have some Indian and probably some black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, we have to end. I wish we could go on. I could do several more hours with you. And I hope, since you're living not that far away, that we'll see
I'm
you
down
soon.
Down the block now.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're headed that way in the near future, so maybe we'll stop by and say
That'd
hi.
Lovely. Thank you, Paul.
Continued success with your work and continued health and happiness.
Thank you.
Jean Houston has been our guest. Jump Time, Shaping Your Future in a World of Radical Change, her new book. We have autographed copies of the book to give away. Be listening for an address that we'll give at the end of the program. Send a postcard with your information, name, address, and phone number, with the words Jump Time to it, and we'll put you in the drawing. It's our way of saying thanks for listening to the program.